Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, March the 16th. Coming up, new figures reveal the number of people living in temporary accommodation in Kent.
The number of families coming through our door asking for help with a homelessness situation has increased by more than 15% between 24-25 and 25-26.
A mum hits back at fraud claims after starting a fundraiser to help her disabled son.
We've had to upload very, very private, personal medical records of Evans, all of his clinic letters, his assessments, to just to prove that he is a real child with very real needs.
And the Gillingham manager says they've hit rock bottom after a 5-0 defeat.
We have to defend better. We have to be stronger. We have to be more robust. Yeah, we're in a pretty poor situation at the moment.
But first, some tragic news to bring you on the podcast. Two young people have died following a meningitis outbreak in Canterbury. One was studying at the University of Kent in the city, while the other was in the sixth form at Queen Elizabeth's Grammar School in Faversham. Several other young people who are believed to be uni students are understood to be in hospital. Well, first, let's hear from our reporter, Max Chesson, who's been at the university campus.
What we heard were students were angry. They were scared. They were frustrated with the university's response. They were upset about having heard the news on social media or through the media before learning from the university. The university has now confirmed that all of its in-person exams will be cancelled, and students in particular blocks, including Keynes, have been asked to go to the Senate building today to receive vaccines and antibiotics. This is a very fast-moving case. We understand that at least a dozen more people are in hospital. What I saw last night as well included parents dramatically coming to get their children. I saw cars being loaded up at 11:30 in the night. It was a sorry sight. This morning the campus is eerie, it's quiet.
And whilst he was there, Max was also able to speak to some students.
4 days out from my dissertation deadline, so you know, it's a bit sticky. But yeah, thoughts go out to the ones who are suffering, and we gotta stay safe. I don't think we know what strain it is at this point, but we've got to be on our toes, social distance and all that, guys.
I'm a third year psychology student, so final year as well. Also got my dissertation equivalent coming up. I was actually doing it when everything came out. It's just really surreal. It just feels like COVID all over again, because everyone's confused and no one knows what's going on. It's really sad as well. I keep seeing people spreading videos of people who are sick around, and I just feel like that might not be the best idea, because these people don't know that they're doing that, so that made me sad as well. It's just, yeah, scary.
A number of people on the campus today have been spotted wearing face masks. Now, the UK Health Security Agency and NHS are arranging for antibiotics for some students, but add the specific strain of meningitis hasn't been identified just yet. They've actually been in contact with 30,000 students, staff and their families to inform them of the current situation and what actions to take. So, what exactly is meningitis and how contagious is it? Kate's been speaking to Dr. Julian Spinks, who's a leading GP in Medway.
Meningitis is an infection which causes inflammation of the membranes that surround the brain, which we call the meninges, hence the name. It's caused by a mixture of microorganisms, both bacteria and viruses. It can affect everybody, but it is more common in children, young adults, and people who have some immune problems. The problem is it moves rapidly. It can move on to sepsis, which can be life-threatening. And so we need to move quickly to treat it if people start to suffer from it.
And so how is it? Is it contagious as in, you know, like a cold or a flu or COVID or something like that? Is that how it's transferred from one person to another?
It generally is relatively close contact. It's spread by things like coughing and sneezing and kissing, but it needs that relatively close contact. So it tends to be within households or, for example, halls of residence or nightclubs, as in this case.
I thought it was interesting. There are links to the club chemistry in Canterbury, and I saw a statement earlier this morning saying that it can be confusing because some of the symptoms of meningitis can look quite like a hangover. What are some of the symptoms that we should be looking out for?
Well, certainly it can start by looking a bit like a hangover with the headache and so on. But what you move on to is a very severe headache, a high fever. You can be vomiting. You can get a stiff neck. You can have problems looking at bright lights. Then later, as it moves on to sepsis, you can get a rash that appears that doesn't fade when you press on it. You can become drowsy, unresponsive, breathless, and have fits. So this is a pretty serious thing. And if you'll start to get those symptoms, then you need to be seeking help immediately. And that involves going to A&E or calling an ambulance. Don't wait around to try and get an appointment with a GP or someone else.
The outbreak is today being linked with a popular nightclub in the city. And bosses at Club Chemistry have released the following statement.
Some people who may have attended Club Chemistry could have been affected by the current outbreak. We are awaiting further information from the UK Health Security Agency, which we will share with you as soon as we have it. Please look out for each other. Our thoughts are with everyone affected by this.
Right now, there are actually calls for the campus to be closed down as a result of the outbreak. And at the time of recording today's podcast, more than 4,000 people had signed it. The city's MP, Rosie Duffield, has posted on social media saying she's thinking very much of those who loved these students, while Faversham MP Helen Whateley says, "My heart goes out to their families." We have asked both members of Parliament for an interview, and you can keep updated with this story today by heading to Kent Online or by following us on socials.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you now, and a man's due in court following reports a woman was attacked with a pair of scissors in Chatham. It's alleged to have happened outside a home in the Chase just before 2 p.m. yesterday. A woman in her 80s was taken to hospital with stab wounds. Now, we're told her injuries are not life-threatening. 25-year-old Orlando Foster from Jeffrey Street in Gillingham has been charged. A Tunbridge man's avoided prison over a crash which left his pregnant girlfriend injured and their unborn child disabled. Ahmed Boshmakov was behind the wheel of the Mercedes when it collided with a BMW and parked car in Longfield Road in Tunbridge Wells in 2023. The Bulgarian national from the ridings in Paddock Wood admitted causing serious injury by careless driving. He was given a suspended sentence and 12-month driving ban. The owner of a dog that bit a delivery driver in Broadstairs has been ordered to pay compensation. The Every courier needed stitches and antibiotics after his leg was injured by the collie-type dog in Churchfields in 2024. The court was satisfied measures had been taken to ensure it couldn't happen again, and the 80-year-old owner was ordered to pay £2,000. Now, stats seen by Kent Online show more than 2,700 households in Kent are currently living in temporary accommodation. That includes more than 1,600 families with children. Medway has the highest number, followed by Dover. But some areas have managed to reduce their figures, including Thanet, where it's dropped from 302 to 219 in the space of a year. Now, Bob Porter is part of the team in charge of housing at the local district council.
We're really delighted that we've been able to get the numbers down so much for two reasons, really. One, because temporary accommodation is very expensive and probably the biggest financial pressure facing the council, but also the impact on the families that we're supporting, you know, being able to find them and help them into a permanent home rather than having to spend time in temporary accommodation, you know, is so good for everybody involved. So, we're really pleased. I think the other key thing is that's against a backdrop of us seeing more people. So the number of families coming through our door asking for help with a homelessness situation has increased by more than 15% since between 24-25 and 25-26. So we're seeing more people, but we're having to place less people in temporary accommodation, which I think it's a really great outcome and, you know, testament to the team's hard work. So, yeah, we are really pleased.
Can you tell me a little bit about the work that does go on behind the scenes to help people who are homeless? And can you tell me a little bit about the work that's been done to reduce that number?
Yeah, well, there's quite a number of different strands to this. So, I mean, I think the first thing that we try and do is prevent somebody becoming homeless in the first place. So if people come and see us while they still have their accommodation, then it gives us time to try and find a solution with them before they have to leave where they're currently living. So that might be us helping them financially with rent in advance or rent deposit to secure a new private sector tenancy. It might be us negotiating with their current landlord so that they can stay where they are. We do a lot of that. Or if it does get to the point where they have to leave, then it might include the offer of temporary accommodation from us. So we do all of those things. And the sooner that people contact us when they think they've got a potential homelessness problem, the better and the more time we have to work with them.
However, it's not all good news, as other parts of Kent have seen an increase in figures. In Folkestone and Hythe, 118 households are living in temporary accommodation. That's doubled in the space of 12 months. Rebecca Shoup is the Cabinet Member for Housing and Homelessness at the Council there.
There were some sort of fundamental underlying issues. Many are common across the whole country, really. And some are, have a particular sort of nuance in the Folkestone and the Hythe district. Really key is the affordability of local private rented accommodation. So if somebody has been given notice by their current landlord, the options are getting fewer and fewer for alternative accommodation in the private rented sector. We've seen rents go up massively over the last few years. And alongside that, the local housing allowance in our district has lagged behind what actual rents are for years and years. And that's the local housing allowance is the maximum amount that people eligible for some assistance with benefits for towards their rent. That's the amount, the maximum amount that's payable. So that's been frozen, in fact, since 2024. So that's another complicating factor. Added to that, we've seen fewer new home, affordable homes being delivered over the last few years. Of course, I think people will be familiar with the impacts that were felt by through the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, inflation that, and the impact that's had on building and the supply chain there has, you know, reduced the number of homes that are being built. So there's just fewer new affordable accommodation coming on board. Yeah, and another sort of national issue that's having an impact is that housing associations, who are a really key provider of social housing, they are having to focus their resources on getting their homes compliant with, obviously, there's all the regulation that's rightly come in after Grenfell and AWAP's law. So they, because a lot of them have sort of, you know, tower blocks that they're having to put their money into. So that means they have less resources to fund new builds. So we're seeing a shortage on that front as well. And also locally, we're seeing more and more complex cases present. For example, you know, people with housing needs, but with very, very complex mental health issues as well. It was a couple of years ago now, I think, Kent County Council funding was withdrawn for a lot of supported accommodation and services that people relied on. So we're seeing those cases present as well. So there's a lot of challenges, as I say. A lot of them are reflected nationally, and a lot, you know, some have a sort of local nuance as well.
You can read these statistics in full and see what the picture's like for where you live in Kent by heading to the story on the website.
Kent Online reports.
Fire crews have responded to two blazes in Kent over the weekend, both believed to have been caused by lithium-ion batteries. A person was treated by paramedics following a fire in Newington Road in Ramsgate on Saturday night, while two people suffered the effects of smoke inhalation at a house in Victoria Hill Road in Swanley on Saturday afternoon. A Sheppey man has claimed he was wrongly discharged from Medway Maritime Hospital while still in severe pain. Terry Utting was admitted with an infected abscess, but says he was told to leave 4 days later while he was still unable to walk. He was back less than 24 hours later. Now, the 46-year-old's called for an inquiry to make sure it doesn't happen to other patients. Hospital bosses have apologised and have told us they're investigating. The exclusion zone around an explosive-filled wreck off the coast of Sheppey is being expanded. It's due to survey works on the SS Richard Montgomery and the area around it, taking place from March the 23rd to April the 5th. The American munition ship sank off Sheerness during the Second World War. Now, a Kent family have been accused of fraud after launching a fundraiser to help build an accessible home for their disabled son. 8-year-old Evan has muscular dystrophy, and money is being raised to build a property near Maidstone with all of the required adaptions in sight. Mum Laura says their GoFundMe was reported, though, by people who believe Evan looks too healthy. Well, Laura's been chatting to our reporter, Dee Lukasik.
At the moment, Evan can... he can walk to some degree. He can do short distances. He can use his arms. He's to look at him now, you'd think that he looked very much like a typical child if you didn't know what you were looking for. But he walks on his toes. He trips a lot. He falls a lot. He can't run. He can't jump. He can't climb a climbing frame like his peers and his friends. He can't go to soft play. He can't go to the trampoline parks. He's very limited in what he can do to try and avoid more damage to the muscles in his legs. The things that he can do are, again, quite limited. He loves Lego. That's his favourite thing to do. He can go bowling, but needs some help. The things that he finds particularly challenging are going up and down the stairs. So he crawls up the stairs. He has to come down the stairs on his bottom because standing on the stairs is far too dangerous for him. So things are really limited for him, what he can and can't do. There are very, very big limitations as to his enjoyment and his quality of life. So as we have been fundraising, we have been sharing our fundraising journey to social media, primarily to Facebook, to reach new people, to educate people, and obviously to help Evan as well. So it started quite small, in you'd post into groups and you would get accused of being a scammer. Don't donate, it's a scam, it's a scam, it's a scam. And then it sort of progressed to not being able to post into groups. So every time I now post into a group, it has to go to an admin approval, even for groups that don't require approval. Then we posted an information post and we were just hit by a barrage of questions asking, why are we expecting the public to pay for our child? You try and explain to these people that's not the case, that's not what we're doing. We've just had to push our pride aside and ask for a little bit of help because we can't do this on our own. And then it escalated to every single time you post, someone will comment something. They will call Evan names. We've had the name Spastic and Flid thrown around for a child who is disabled and hasn't asked for any of this, which is just horrifying and disgusting. I myself have been told that I should do OnlyFans, which is quite laughable, really. We've been told that all sorts of things. We've had our GoFundMe, Evan's GoFundMe, reported to GoFundMe as a scam or as fraud, which is just, it's targeting a defenceless child who doesn't deserve any of this.
Again, you can read that story in full and find a link to the fundraiser at Kent Online.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and the Gillingham manager has said his side have hit rock bottom after another heavy defeat in League Two. They lost 5-0 away at Cambridge United on Saturday following a 5-1 loss to MK Dons last Tuesday night. Well, Gareth Ainsworth spoke to us after the final whistle.
The scoreline justifies the result. It was the performance, yeah, especially up to when I was able to make the changes, was not good enough by any means, you know. Terrible. Some real thinking now for the boys. They've got you know, and me. The injuries is one thing, but again, you've got to stand up to set pieces, you've got to fight, you've got to scrap. I feel responsible because a couple of, you know, some players in there that came in after me, and I've got to take responsibility. But like I said, the injuries coming back was the bright spark, as was Harry Waldock, who I thought had a cracking game, even he didn't deserve to be in a 5-0 defeat, and he'll have a career. But on today's performance, not everyone will. We have to defend better. We have to be stronger. We have to be more robust. It's just, yeah, we're in a pretty poor situation at the moment. Injuries, I know, they cost us, and I know when you've not got your best tools in your bag, you struggle to do the job properly. So them coming back is big, but, you know, with losing Ethan Coleman midweek again, it's another big name that, you know, is on the injury list. So we're going to have to find a way, and that's what I'm saying to the boys. We've got to find a way. You've got to, you know, we're in rock bottom here. You've got to make sure we find a way, because Tuesday's a big game against Swindon at home. I want to win that game. I know how much it means to the fans, and I know how frustrated the fans are at the moment, but the clarity is that these injuries are coming back. I know exactly what I want to do. I just don't think some players are good enough, and I've got to make changes there.
Is it worse today? I think it's over 1,000 Jules fans here today hoping to see a response from Tuesday. What's your kind of message to them after seeing so many here today?
Yeah, brilliant support as always. To see a response still with all the injuries out was going to be a tall order. Played some people who, you know, maybe aren't up to it, and had to give a debutant to one of our first year pros, and I thought he did well. But I thought once the changes were made, we get a little bit stronger, and I think you see then we keep control of the ball a bit better. We still ship to goal, and I understand that's a poor one to defend, but some of the boys haven't trained for 2 days. You know, I didn't want to put them on. You know, Gareth McCleary was a risk putting on towards the end there, Omar, Bradley and Armani, and, you know, so I'm just glad that it wasn't compounded by a reoccurrence of an injury. You know, I think everyone's come through that good, so that, you know, the team will be stronger for Tuesday. But I've still got a few out, you know, so the other boys have got to step up as well. And yeah, devastated to lose it, you know, 5-0. This is a very strong team. And, you know, while we've had our injury crisis, we've played second, third, and we're about to play fourth in the league. And that doesn't go well, you know. We seem to have had it tough on the fixtures, but got to play everyone, and you've got to stand up to it. Some of the boys didn't today.
But the Jewels haven't got long to get players back from injury. They're taking on Swindon Town at Priestfield tomorrow night. Staying with football, and London City Lionesses have lost to Arsenal in the WSL. The side who trained near Aylesford were beaten 2-0 at home yesterday. It's their third defeat in a row, leaving them seventh in the table. And in ice hockey, the Invicta Dynamos have won their final game of the regular season. They beat Romford Buccaneers 2-1 at Planet Ice in Gillingham last night after a 3-2 win against the same side away from home on Saturday. Today, the Mohs have already claimed fourth place in the South Division 1 table, and the playoffs come next. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium as well. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.